Well, if that's a fantastic achievement, isn't it? And obviously there's people who are doing that too.
Absolutely.
Many people within your who you work with,
yes,
with AgPath, are actually achieving that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's field days around the area where growers, you know, vegetable growers, for example, are just showing that their disease levels are going down. Therefore, the cost of having to buy herbicide, fungicides, for example, has just gone to nothing. There are people around big enterprises up in the Yarra Valley, for example. Huge commercial enterprises that are now using biology in the vineyards, for example. Down here on the Kooyarra peatlands where I live, there are huge commercial vegetable growers like leafy greens, lettuces, those sorts of things, spinach leaves, that sort of thing. They're now using compost that they're making on the property from the waste, from the leftover after the vegetables are harvested, and they're utilizing that. And that's apart from, say, some, you know, fish emulsion, seaweed, etc., that's their total input into their property, whereas before they were buying huge amounts of chemicals. And they are saying themselves, look at what I'm doing. This is working.
Mm. And the soil is improving too, I guess.
Brilliantly.
Yes. Now, when it comes to a course like you are doing at Lismore in Victoria, and I must emphasise it is Victoria,
yes,
that what if a farmer wants to get involved with a course like that, how does he get involved? Like, does he talk to AgPath, how can he, say, organise one, or you can organise one in his area?
Absolutely. What happens is generally people will look on the website, and on the front page or on the home page, there's usually a sign to say that there is a workshop. But generally what happens, people will email me and say, look, we've heard about the course. We've got a group of people in our area. You know, they might be a land care group, or they might be a farming group, which is what's happening in Lismore at near Camperdown day after tomorrow. It's a group of grain and sheep growers who've got together, and they have actually organized the venue, arranged everything. All I do is come along with the people who are going to be involved in the course and present. So what people tend to do is they've heard of a course, they send me an email and saying when is the next one, where is it, or can we in our area, wherever that happens to be, organise one? And so what we do then is we try to find some dates that suit both myself and the people who present with me and the group, and then we go ahead and lock it in. And so it's actually as I don't tend to just lock them in and say, look, we're going to have one here. You come to me. I tend to like to go to people because I know farmers are time poor. So I tend to wait for people to come in and phone in and say, look, we'd like to run a workshop. So I'll go wherever they want to go.
Now, one thing I heard you just say, farmers are time poor, and what we find, and you would have found this too, that farmers, I'm talking like the broadacre farmers, everything is done to a sort of like a precision to a time. They sort of have to do things quickly. How does biological farming fit into this sort of where everything is done so quickly on such a large scale? Can you give me a sort of example on broadacre farming?
Yeah. I think that probably the easiest way to say in a large, where you've got a very large enterprise, is there's a transition period from conventional to biological. And what we're finding, for example, with broadacre potato growers, say in Tasmania, is that they're going almost paddock by paddock. and they're making the change because it is a big shift in it calls for faith. They will transition through from a conventional through to a biological, maybe over a couple of seasons. And so it's not a case of saying, okay, the whole property is going to go from one farming system to another farming system. They will take part of the property and make that transition and then be comfortable with that transition and then bring the rest of the property online. And so it's a transition, and I would never tell a farmer how to run their enterprise. What I do is say, here is another way that is more sustainable in the long term at potentially lower cost. And the time involved is actually no more than it would be if they were a conventional farmer, assuming that they farm the land themselves and they don't just bring in contractors. Now, there is that difference. Because if you're a hands-on farmer, then ultimately the time spent is less in biological farming. But if you simply have a property and you have a contractor come in and do the work for you, then I would suggest that there has to be a real shift in thinking on both parties, the farmer and the contractor, because contractors will put out chemicals. There is not a lot of contractors who understand how to put out biology, but they are there, and I work with them. So in terms of time, I would suggest that it's a much more rewarding farming system to be biological, because you can see results that are long-term, and it's not a case of putting on a chemical year after year after year after year, because that has to be saying that something is not working. So in terms of time, I would suggest there's probably, in the first instance, not a lot of difference, assuming that it's a hands-on farmer that we're talking about and not somebody who has contractors do the work for them. And I tend to be waffling a little bit here because I'm trying to show that it depends on the farming enterprise, and the amount of application is much less. The amount of time on the tractor, I guess, is much less, because once the transition has been made, there's less disease management to worry about. So it comes back to simply soil management and then crop planting and harvesting, if that's what it is, if we're talking about a crop. And so the actual time on the tractor, I would suggest, once you have a good soil in balance and a good cropping system going, then it's much less, because your disease management is it's either negligible or it has been significantly reduced. So I would say, in the end, there's more time.
As soon as you mention less time on the tractor, that also indicates that it's a farming for the future, because fossil fuels and tractor operation is, it's like fossil fuels. It's getting to a point of, we just don't know where
running
it's
out.
Going.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah,
well,
yeah.
I mean, this is right. Tractor. So there you're buying diesel, fossil fuel. You're compacting the soil. Loss of biology. You're putting out chemicals. Also, are running out. I mean, we're talking about lime and superphosphate and whatever running out in the next, well, certainly in the lifetime of our children. And these things aren't there. But the thing is, if they're put on year after year after year, they're being leached away. They're not being used properly. We're going to run out. There is a better way. We have organisms that will do all of this. And they don't cost anything. They improve the soil. They don't compact the soil. They improve the quality of the crop. And they are much more disease resistant. And even in some cases, they will improve the quantity of the crop. So I can't think of a negative, Hugo.
No. It's a win every way.
Yes.
Now, if a farmer, well, not so much if, when a farmer wants to move in the direction of the ag path, can you sort of take him from step one through to the final to, you know, guide them along with what they have to do?
Yeah. Well, usually once they know about me, they will know about the website, or they'll pick up on the website. And then usually they'll then email me or make a telephone call, and we have a discussion about their potential problem or about the fact that they would like to go down the direction of maybe biological farming. And then we make arrangements to make a visit, and we discuss actually on site or with great clarity if it's at long distance. With photographs and things like that having been sent in, how or discuss a way of going forward. We then suggest that a soil the soil food web is looked at, and a soil chemistry is looked at. And if they're growing a crop, then we have a look at the tissue sampling as well. And so what we try to do by talking with the grower or the farmer is build up a baseline picture of their enterprise at this time. And all of the forms and whatever that they need is on the AgPath website. And so they fill those in, and they either bring them in or send them in. And then once we get some figures, then we go back and talk again about how they can go through a transition into a different system. And we advise them. I have advisors who work with me who are skilled in making compost or making compost teas or providing equipment for the farmers to do that themselves. But we try to work as closely as possible by being as familiar as we can with their enterprise, because I don't necessarily like working with people just at the end of a telephone. It's important for me to know their enterprise intimately so that we can advise in the best possible way the way forward. So it's really a case of they hear about AgPath, they look at the website, they phone me or they email me, and then we decide how best to go forward for them. If it happens to be a disease problem they have, then again, a phone call, I direct them to the website for the paperwork, they send in their material or they bring their material in. If it happens to be an environmental problem, then we can go out and take swabs and bring them back here and work with them, and then show them how to remediate if it happens to be a house or a hospital or something like that. So very widely, it's a case of making that first contact, either telephone call, email, or through the website. And then we discuss their problem in detail, but we try to be as hands-on as we can with the client.
So, Mary, it sounds like a person can come to you who's just starting off in the idea of biological farming, as well as someone who's well down the track.
I have farmers coming in and saying, "Okay, Mary, I've heard about this biology. Convince me." So I say, "Do you like coffee? We have a good coffee here. So come and sit down and I will convince you. But it's not for me to convince you. What I would like to say is, let's do a little experiment on your farm. And let's just take, you know, one garden bed or half an acre or half a hectare, or, and let me convince you that way by seeing it." So yes, and then farmers who are well versed, they'll send in and they'll say, "Mary, look, we've just had a crop off, fantastic crop. Here's the baseline data that we got 2 years ago. can you do another soil for me, please? And can we compare? Then can we discuss what progress we've made? Or we'll have someone coming in and saying, look, our tissue sample is saying that we're lacking in microelements. What do I do? So we say, well, okay, what are you doing at the moment? Why then would there be a microelement deficiency? Let's have a discussion about that. And it may well be that they need to bring in some microelements through maybe, you know, fish emulsion or a kelp or a little bit of good compost tea. So it doesn't matter where they are. It doesn't matter what the problem. If it's soil or it's fungal, then we can deal with it. There's a way of dealing with it. But it's for me to provide the farmer with a piece of information that they can use and they feel comfortable with using.
That's fantastic. Now, Mary, I tuned into the word independent early in this CD, and the microscope. Are farmers being able to use the microscope? Can you talk about the role of the microscope on the farm? What's in it for the farmer to own a microscope? How does he own a microscope? What does he look for? Classes and things like that. Can we really sort of thrash out the subject of microscopes? And because the more we can put farmers in control of their destiny, be more independent, I think the better for, well, everyone.
Exactly. No, that's absolutely true. Microscopes are like a lot of other things. You get what you pay for. But there are particularly good microscopes that are very much affordable. And there's just a few things that need to be part of that. And that's the fact that any microscope that someone purchases must have an adjustable light source so that you can tweak the amount of light to be able to see things that are as small as bacteria, which are only, you know, a micron or so in diameter. So on my website, I have a whole lot of suppliers of microscopes of all different prices that people can have a look at. And so what they do is they have a look and then they'll go away to a supplier. And then normally I get an email back saying, now, this is what we've been offered and this is the cost. Is this going to be appropriate? And so
I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah, and I go back and I say, look, you don't need 100 times oil immersion because you're not going to, unless you're a serious microscopist, you're not going to need that. But you need, say, a 10, a 20, and a 40. You do need an adjustable light because you've got to be able to, as I say, just tweak that light to get best benefit looking at what you want. And it would be nice to have a stage that's movable as well. So all of those things are very basic. Now, what I do with my courses, I actually have people come here either by themselves for a day's tuition, or they get a group together, they have their own microscopes, and I show them how to use their microscope. And that's what's really important. Is if they're serious about looking at soil biology, a simple microscope that has those adjustable lights and whatever that I talked about, it's important that the farmer or whoever it is learns to use their microscope, not my microscope, their microscope. And so I run little individual courses, or two or three people get together and come to my lab and we'll have a day's tuition. Or I have microscope days as part of the compost tea 3-day courses. The third day is on how to use a microscope. So in that third day, it's not just a case of looking down the microscope. People are encouraged to bring their own microscopes along, and then we actually show them how to use that microscope as skillfully as possible to get the maximum benefit out of limitations that any microscope will have. Once they do that, then they can use the microscope to have a look at their compost, have a look at their compost tea, have a look at their soil. By just making up a little dilution, in a beaker, or not in a beaker, but in a cup or a glass, about one part of soil or compost to nine parts of water. Then you put a drop on a microscope slide, put it under the cover slip. We teach them how to do that. The other advantage of having a microscope, if you have a leaf on your leafy greens or your vineyard or your pasture grass, and you can see there's something there, you can actually put that under the microscope at low power and have a look and say, look, I think I've got a problem here. I'll take a photograph of it, email it to Mary, and find out what it is. Now, if it's a disease like a mildew or something on a crop, that spreads very quickly. But the time it takes to bring it into the house, take a photograph of it, email it to me, have me come back with an answer, it might only be 24 hours. And there's a way that we can then, the grower can then say, well, okay, yeah, I need to do something about this. No, this isn't really important. It's just a non-thrifty plant. Let's pull it out or deal with it in some way. And so understanding how to use a simple microscope really does give a lot of power to a farmer or a gardener to be able to do quite a lot of simple work themselves in not necessarily identifying, but at least saying, well, okay, I think I might have a problem. I'd better get some more advice on this.